Babylon Podcast was our last best hope for B5 fans. A self-contained show, 1 hour long, located on an RSS feed. A place for interviews and episode discussions for a whole bunch of humans and aliens. A shining beacon in cyberspace, all alone on the web. It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, the year the Lost Tales came upon us all. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2007. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I am Tim Callender.
Hey there, it's Jeffrey Willard calling you from downtown Hollywood, where I just got out of jail. Oh, wait, I'm sorry. I have to go back. I'm sorry. I'll be right with you.
Now, did you use your card to do that?
I've got frequent flyer miles at jail around here. Are you kidding?
You have your own personal visitor's pass?
Yeah. Jeffrey Willard Memorial Prison Wing.
I've got one of those speed passes for when they book me. You just go in a flash. Okay, go on right on through. Good to see you again, Jeffrey.
So did you do this just to meet Paris Hilton?
No, Paris got in to meet me.
Whoa, that's right.
There's Sticky private and clubs, and then there's Kosh Club.
Not going there.
Okay.
Kosh Club, where your dollar buys more.
Right. Exactly. What's going on with you kids?
I'm just happy that we've made it through two seasons, and we're getting more and more. We're getting into the meat of the series, and I am both curious and afraid of what this is going to generate as far as supplemental content from both Edmund and Yarsto and Tijan.
Thank you. I was going to say, we've got a third party added to that. And tonight's episode that we're going to deep geek on, which is Matters of Honor, has an extended appearance of our favorite Vorlon.
Mm-hmm.
Having a conversation with Captain Sheridan.
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, they're a fan favorite.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Yeah. And I don't know if Jeff knew this, but someone left in the comments that Babylon5.com has finally added credit information for Kosh. You've been added to the supporting cast, both voice actor and body actor. Well, you've been added as the body.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, holy cow, that only took a freaking decade. You know, good things come to those who wait and wait and wait.
And wait. Well, so does this mean you're going to get more roles as someone inside of suits?
Well, I just think TV show ever needs a Vorlon, I certainly hope they'll call me for the role.
You do have experience.
I need to have a resume with just one line on it. I do Vorlons.
There's just something so wrong about that.
But you know what? That I think it was the Lurker's Guide, if I'm not mistaken, still to this day says that Kosh was animatronic.
Really?
Really?
That I've always enjoyed that. I thought that was special.
Yep.
Yeah.
Here it is. I'm right here. Kosh Naranek, played by Ardwight Chamberlain and Jeffrey Willers.
That's on the
official
Babylon5.warnerbrothers.com.
Nice. Hmm. Well, that's great. That's great. See that?
You have finally arrived, young one.
Yeah. Oh, my mom.
See, this podcasting thing paid off finally.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Some people have a campaign to get their star on the Walk of Fame. Jeffrey had a campaign to just get his name put in public.
But in this day and age, it'll be more like a star on the wiki.
Hey, a star on the wiki can take you a long way. Don't knock the wiki.
I don't. I don't.
People keep asking me if I'm going to have a Babylon 5 or a Babylon podcast wiki. I have a lot to do. So if you want to volunteer to actually help me, I can set one up and you do all the work. We can talk. Otherwise,
yeah,
catch me next year.
Or maybe the year after that.
Or after
and
that.
And as you guys saw in that email I sent you, and for those fans who are eagerly awaiting, with the dialogue continues with Ron Thornton to get him to come on board to be a guest, and we're excited about that. It's just the time and logistics of coordinating his schedule and ours has been that way with all our guests. You know, it's just a little difficult.
Yeah.
But we're working it. We're working it.
We shall persevere.
And we have faith in you, Jeffrey.
Well, Mike didn't check the mailbox today, so I don't know if we have a gift waiting or not. But we can check later.
You asking me to go to run to the mailbox?
Can you?
Yeah. Why don't we take a break, Mike?
Yes.
You go run the mailbox.
Take us out. We'll do a mailbox check, and we'll let you know the results of that mailbox check in listener feedback section. How's that sound?
Okay. I like it.
Gold Channel Online. Message received from Operative Number 6, Ministry of Information.
Mission update, Operation Dutch Courage, Syria Plenum Command Post reporting. The EAS Netherlands has slipped off the beacon in a desperate attempt to elude our pursuit. The Black Omegas follow, leaving individual Star Furies behind to mark the path back to the beacon. The core mothership Basset has been recalled from its hyperspace patrol and is now approaching the area, where the Black Omegas are guiding it towards the Netherlands. Although the trailblazing has tied up some of our forces, the Vasset is a Nova-class dreadnought. Our recent acquisition of artificial gravity has vastly improved its maneuverability. Its firepower, plus the combination of its own Star Furies with the remaining Black Omegas, should make short work of its Omega-class opponent. I've just received an update. More P-12s have been added to the linked array, extending their range even deeper into hyperspace. They have detected a group of ships beyond the Netherlands, flying on the fringes of another beacon. If they're military, the balance of forces may be compromised. The command staff has held the Vasset in place until these new ships can be identified. The Corps is mother, the Corps is father. Syria Plenum out.
It's back and it's better than ever. August 31st through September 3rd, downtown Atlanta, DragonCon presents Podcasting Now and Beyond with screaming turbo action. Sponsored by Farpoint Media and Skepticality at the downtown Atlanta Hilton, Marriott, and the Hyatt. It's the largest convention of its kind in the world. Podcasting events for all 4 days. Special guests and popular podcasters include Skepticality, Keith and the Girl, Farpoint Media, Scott Sigler, J.C. Hutchins, The Signal, and many, many more. Here are some of your favorite shows being recorded live. Podcasting parties all through the weekend, including Scott Sigler's podcast Players Ball on Friday. Go to www.dragon-pod.com for the latest information.
BABCOM link to Earth Force Destroyer Netherlands established. Incoming message from Captain Yarstow.
Captain's log, EAS Netherlands, 70 days after secession. We have now gone far enough off the beacon that we can't be fully certain of ever finding the next beacon. But still there are fighters pursuing us, with a larger ship supporting them, hovering on the extreme edge of our sensor range. As if that wasn't enough to worry about, there are now fighters in front of us as well. From their basic profile they look like Frasi-class Narn heavy fighters, but their power readings and some minor parts of their silhouettes differ from our data on the Frasi-class. We had them on sensors for about an hour when we received the challenge. That message, added to the sensor data, leads me to believe that we're dealing with some upgrade of the Frasi-class. Presumably the upgrades have allowed them to elude the Centauri for all these months. I've attached the challenge we received to this log, in the hope that something may be learned from it if things go wrong. We will certainly have to handle this situation carefully. even allowing for the stranger effects of combat in hyperspace and the upgrades these ships have apparently received, I believe we could fight our way past them without fear of being destroyed. But we would certainly be hurt in such a fight, and there are enough ships pursuing us that any damage could fatally tip the balance. We must therefore hope to win the day with diplomacy.
One attachment found.
Advanced fighter squadron to unknown vessel. This is your only warning. Identify yourself immediately or we will engage. Repeat, unknown vessel. Identify yourself immediately.
Digging down to the obscurest facts in fandom. This is Deep Geeking.
Embarking on season 3, where all of the chickens come home to roost.
Let's start with, well, tonight's episode, of course, is Matters of Honor, which is the third season opener. But let's talk about one of the things that is the first thing that's most striking about the new season, and that's the new open.
Yes.
Where you've got Claudia Christian's voiceover, Babylon Project was our last best hope for peace. And there's two Star Furies. It looks like they're flying in formation, except one then blows the other one out of space.
At which point, everyone sat stock still and went, "What did I just say?"
Yes, right. And of course, the voiceover, it failed. And, you know, that just basically tells you, it's not even foreshadowing, that's not quite the right word, it's symbolic. And if you ever, you know, as we've talked in the past, that one of the great things about Babylon 5 is that at the end of every episode there's not the big fat reset button.
Mm-hmm.
The third season basically says there's no big fat reset button for the series. You know, it basically tells you there's going to be no hope for everybody to finally put aside their differences, sit down, hold hands, and have a happy ending.
Yes. He's like, there is no reset button. There never was a reset button. If you thought there was a reset button, sorry, not right. In this series.
Right. Oh, and by the way, this isn't going to be just your good guys versus bad guys because, you know,
everyone,
some of the good guys might be bad.
Yeah. Right. Everyone is gray. Literally.
Yeah. Well, right. Right. So, you know, outstanding. And it's a cool open, too, with swinging around the station, and the new visuals and all the rest. I mean, it's tells you that new and different things are coming down the pike for this year. And, of course, as it turns out, one of the new additions is the appearance of Marcus Cole, Ranger. He is seen leaving a Ranger training facility on Zagros 7, getting through the blockade at the sacrifice of his Drazi friend. And he comes to Babylon 5 and seeks out Delenn, who then, of course, takes him to Sheridan to say, well, we've got this training base. It's been blockaded for 2 weeks, and we think we're the target because there's really nothing else there that the Centauri or anybody would have interest in. And we need help getting out. And so Sheridan basically decides, you know what, despite the wrinkles of, you know, maybe not being ready, or as Garibaldi points out, we don't have no firepower to go in and break a blockade. You need some sort of ships, and we don't have that. And Ivanov also points out that they've got a visitor from Earth who's investigating the gun camera footage from Kefir's Star Fury of the unknown object in hyperspace. But Sheridan says, nope, you know, I promised that in taking over leadership of the Rangers, you know, that I take that responsibility seriously, and we're going to go ahead and take care of this.
Yep. And we literally jump feet first into, well, we don't know it's a two-pronged war until much later, but you literally see all the skirmishes, the action starting up, And this is where, this is the no turning point for Babylon 5. Once they go out of their way to help the Rangers, they have stepped in it. Not a lot of people know they've stepped in it because they've got a new toy.
Yes, the White Star.
Yes, but they have definitely stepped in it.
Correct, correct. They have cast their lot, and there's no turning back. But that's basically what Sheridan's saying. You know, we've watched and waited, and it's time to take action, and let's go do this thing. And that's when, of course, we are introduced to the White Star. Summer, when you first saw the White Star, what did you think of it?
I thought it was an interesting idea, but I wasn't sold on the design. I knew where they were going with the design, but I wasn't. It looked top heavy.
I would agree with something the Great Maker himself has even said. It, from certain angles, it looks like a plucked chicken.
I remember the first time I read that description, I'm like, oh, okay. I wasn't going there, but now that you mention it, I can't get it out of my head.
Yeah, you know, it's almost ironic. I remember the first time I saw Star Wars way back in 1977, and you come into Docking Bay 94, and there's the Millennium Falcon.
Mm-hmm.
And as a kid, you never seen anything like it. It was the coolest spaceship ever, and Luke Skywalker goes, what a piece of junk. And,
uh-huh.
Like, what are you talking about? And this was almost the opposite. Everybody's going, whoa, it's beautiful. It's like, no, that's kind of odd looking.
He's like, yeah, no, not so much.
Right.
And then they had quite what I had in mind, but we'll work with it.
And, of course, then there is, you know, in this episode, they had the intestines on all the railings inside the bridge interior.
Yeah, I'm glad they changed that, because that part I kind of went, okay.
Yeah, I think, again, that's one of those that, you know, oh, we'll put all these Minbari things on it to make it look Minbari, and then when they actually got it on there, it's like, ugh. Or maybe that was Sheridan's influence. Maybe, you know, when they got back to B5 after rescuing the Rangers, he says, get rid of the entrails. So anyways, of course, they go to Zagros 7. And find that there's automatic blockade mines in place, but no Centauri warship hanging around to sort of oversee the blockade. And as they're pondering this, a shadow vessel ripples out of hyperspace. Everybody freaks out. Delenn is beside herself. We're not ready.
Delenn's reaction startled me, because we're used to seeing her be this calm, almost not really stoic, but just confident. You know, it's like, we'll be ready. And then she goes, whoa, not get out, not here, not now.
Right.
And that was startling, because she had a moment of, and she just freaked. She's like, we gotta go, just now, just go.
Yeah.
And Sheridan's like, no, because they'll follow us home and it'll be bad.
Yeah, well, I love the lens, you know, the little exchange there. She's like, listen to me, Captain. You don't know what you're in for. Once they target you, they don't stop until you're destroyed. They're relentless, and there's no way we can stop them. And he just looks at her and says, with all due respect, Ambassador, I've heard that before. And, you know, this from Sheridan Starkiller, if there's anybody who's going to figure out a way to do it, it's going to be him.
Yep. And his choice was unique and out of the box.
And potentially out of his head. Although, again, that's one of those, you know, once the solution was there, it's, you know, again, kind of the plot thing. You knew it was going to succeed, because they're not going to kill off all their characters in one fell swoop. It's just, you know, all the stuff that's leading up to it. Again, this isn't the denouement where everything's resolved. This is just the first time they run into him, and they got away this time because Sheridan was clever and the shadows didn't know who they were fighting against. So it's not like, you know, we pull this maneuver, it's really cool, woohoo, you know, they get away. The fact of the matter is, you know, like you said earlier, they've stepped in it. Because now the shadows know who they're looking at. You know, they may not know it's Sheridan and Delenn and that crew, but they know that certainly this particular vessel represents a race that is antithetical to the Shadow's motives.
They know that someone out there is opposing them, and they don't know who it is.
Exactly. So, you know, it's a good adventure. You know, that the adventure part of the story was very good. I think we need to take a couple steps back. One of the other points that is happening is the visit of Mr. Ndawe, ambassador from Earth, who is sent to, actually not ambassador, he's from Special Intelligence Division, investigating the gun camera footage of the object in hyperspace.
Yes. The last message from the late and lamented Lieutenant Keffer?
I don't know. I don't miss him so much.
Well, apparently all the suits who thought they needed a cute flyboy did.
Yes. Yes. JMS resolved to kill him off at the best opportunity, and he picked a doozy, that's for sure.
He did.
Yeah. Now, here's Mr. Ndawe, and he has come to investigate this, and he's going to talk with the other ambassadors from all the other races, too, to see what they know, because, you know, he asked to speak to Delenn first, because of one of the older races. They've probably run into this. Let me ask you something.
Mm-hmm.
We know that Minbari... Well, first we're told Minbari don't lie.
Right.
Then we find out Minbari will lie if there are matters of honor at stake.
Right.
This was just an out-and-out lie on Delenn's part to say that, you know...
No, it wasn't, remember?
Well, that's true. She hadn't really
seen... She had never actually seen one prior to that moment. So she did not lie. This is Mr. Ndawi's.
I used the tongs to get the cookie out of the jar because if Mom asked me, did I stick my hand in the cookie jar, I could say, no, I really didn't.
No, he did not ask. He did not say, do you know this race?
He said, yes.
Have you seen this ship before? Have you ever seen this before? And my guess is that he was following instructions from who we find out later on are Mr. Morden and a psychop.
Right.
And he asked the specific question they wanted to know. Does anybody recognize this ship? Has anybody seen this ship before? So he asked what he was sent out to ask. And she had never laid eyes on that ship. Her personally had never seen a shadow vessel before in her entire life.
Okay.
So technically she told the truth. If he had asked a different question, it would have been interesting to see how she would have phrased her answer. But I thought that was a very telling tale.
Sheridan knew that she knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
she knew what it was.
Because as soon as Ndawe left, no preamble whatsoever. Just said, that's one of theirs, isn't it?
Uh-huh. And he said, you lied. No, I didn't. I've never seen one before now.
Right, yeah, yeah. So take a good look, John.
Mm-hmm.
Face of your enemy. So Ndawe goes to visit Londo in what can only be termed as the Duel of the Accents.
That's funny.
Have you seen this before? Yes, in a dream. A dream? That's what I said, a dream. sorry. It's a good scene, though, because, you know, here's Mr. Ndawe. He's already said to Delenn, well, you know, I didn't really expect to get it, you know, right off the bat. You know, ask around, goes to Londo, and much to Ndawe's surprise, he says, yes, I have seen this. Oh? And ours, he says, yes, and relates his dream, where he sees thousands of shadow vessels in the skies over Centauri Prime. And I love the line when Ndawe says, kind of incredulous, like, is that all? And Londo says, it is enough. And... you know, that's part of, I think, what's driving Londo's desire to separate himself from Mr. Morden and his associates.
Mm-hmm.
And without so much as saying it, he says it in that line.
Yeah.
And then, of course, his whole demeanor changes. I mean, up to that point, he'd been very friendly with, you know, nothing I'd do for my good friends from Earth, even before our treaty, and, you know, we shall get drink, and, you know, the whole, you know, reveling in life. And, of course, after he sees the ship, he's just kind of he's withdrawn, and, you know, I'm sorry, that's all. Perhaps one of the others, you know, he gestures at the door, And then, of course, later when he meets with Mr. Borden to, you know,
terminate relations.
Yeah. Yes, there you go. I was wondering. I've never seen one of your ships. Perhaps, yes, perhaps.
Mm.
And then, well, it's back to Ndawe. Of course, he's getting nowhere, and he's trying to find Sheridan and Ivanova, who have left with Delenn to take the White Star to Zagra 7, and. And Dawe sort of beside himself, and Garibaldi says, well, you know what, they don't tell me what's going on because I don't want to know what's going on.
That whole convoluted.
No, that was just, that was so strange. But
no, that was perfect Garibaldi.
Oh, I know, it was, exactly. And then, of course, when he tells Mr. Dawe, so why don't you go talk to Shakar about this? Maybe he knows something about this ship. And Dawe says, well, I'm not supposed to have any contact because of the, you know, our treaty with the Centauri. And Garibaldi, of course, says, well, you know what? Just do it unofficially, and I can tell you that the head of security won't report you because you won't tell yourself. Yeah. You know, you're right. It is, it's perfect Garibaldi. Very good. And that's another great scene where Dawe visits with Shakar, and he says, I want to know if you've seen the ship. And Shakar's first reaction, oh, finally
someone's asking. Yes.
Yes, he brings out the book of Jaquan and lays it all out. I mean, you know, he's Shakar, to him this is just confirmation of everything he knows what's going on. And he, of course, ends his interview with a chilling line: to all things, Mr. Ndawe, there's a time, perhaps this is theirs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, when Ndawe finally gets back to Earth and he delivers his report at Earth Dome in Geneva, the woman there in charge of the commission basically shakes his hand. Good work. We'll let you know what we find. And when Ndawe leaves, in walks Mr. Morden and the Psycop. And she basically says, well, it's all in the report. You know, there's not a whole lot there. It's, you know, mostly from the Nard. And they say, well, we've neutralized that problem. That won't give us any
yes.
Any grief, yeah. And as long as nobody knows, you know, publicly who this is, my associates are fine with that, says Morden. And the Psycop says, you know, I kind of like the idea of a threat to planetary security. We could step up the program at home.
Mm-hmm. And the little glint that Morden gets in his eyes, like, really? Tell me more, because I didn't think of that, and I like where you're going with it. That was just creepy, because he goes,
yeah.
Really? Hey, I like that.
Yeah, what did you have in mind? Oh, you know, a little party, a couple drinks. Crackdown on all freedoms. Yeah, so that's neat stuff. Let's see, other things that we should touch on. Number one, when the episode actually opens with a teaser, it picks up where Fall of Night left off,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that you're seeing the station undergoing repairs from the bomb and the
battle damage. Core. Yeah,
yeah, right. Which I thought was pretty neat, and you know, Sheridan talking with Kosh in the Zen Garden, and that's about as direct as Kosh ever gets. You know, he Sheridan asks, where have you been? And Kosh says, well, you know, being seen by so many is, you know, exhausting, so I had to go recharge. And the other thing that I noticed with this is, and even back then, you know, the first time I saw it and then subsequent viewings, the relationship between Kosh and Sheridan becomes more one of comrades, I guess is the best way to put it. You know, that it's almost banter that's going on between them. When, you know, as Kasha is walking away and Sheridan goes, you know, I just had a thought. How do I know you're the same Vorlon that's in that suit? And Kasha, I can't remember exactly what he says, but Sheridan says, you know, I hate it when you do that. And Kasha says, good. which is interesting because one of the things that, especially in Gene Cavellis's Technomage trilogy, it points out that the other Vorlons, and now we get to compare with Ulkesh, look at Kasha as almost being weak because he seems to, you know, he has feelings of fondness for the lesser races.
Yeah, he cares for them, and they think that's his that's bad.
Right. No, they're just tools of the Great War. You know, you don't have compassion for a screwdriver. but that's why that scene I like a lot is because it, you know, there's a certain warmth there between those two characters. And, you know, Sheridan, you know, everybody else is in awe of Kosh. Even Delenn, who is ostensibly working as an equal in the coming war with the Vorlons, still there's a certain sense of awe and reverence that she has when she's dealing with Kosh. Yeah. Sheridan doesn't buy into it at all. And so he asks these direct questions. How do I know you're the same Kosh in that encounter suit? You know, I hate it when you do that. Can you imagine anybody else saying that to the Vorlons?
Yeah. And I think it's actually a good insight, a good peek into their relationship because it's something it relates later when he asks Kosh to step up and help. And Kosh is, you know, when he appears to him in a dream and he says, you know, I was afraid, you were right. It shows how much Kosh cared for humans and for Sheridan in particular.
Yes.
And we see later on that the Ulkesh, not happy. Not happy.
Ulkesh mad. Yes. Ulkesh isn't that he's unhappy. Ulkesh doesn't have conversations with a screwdriver.
Yes.
That's what it boils down to.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. Any other points that we need to cover with this episode?
Other than the first glimpse of Marcus taking an interest in Ivanova? Nope.
Yeah, it's almost there's you know, it's almost as though she is makes the first step toward him. You know, they're on the White Star. She says, you haven't said much. And he says, I generally don't say anything when I don't have anything to say.
Hmm, okay. Yeah, I never looked at it like that.
You know, I mean, he's the one that's kind of being, sullen's not quite the right word, but, you know, just kind of
aloof.
Off on his own.
Aloof
right? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
He's exactly. Being a ranger. And all of a sudden, she talks to him, and he goes, whoa. Huh,
right,
I never saw that. I never pictured it quite like that.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, the tables turn. He starts pursuing her, and she doesn't know what to do with that until it's too late. Never even bossed him.
Interesting.
Yeah, but, you know, and I have to say, my first impression of Marcus was not particularly favorable, and it's not so much, you know, anything in the character itself or, you know, in the way he was portrayed. Nothing like that. It was just kind of, you know, how Jason Carter played him. It was just, I think it was such an unexpected addition to the cast.
Really?
That for me, you know, at the time, I really wasn't sure where Zivanov finds, asks where he fits in things. But, because everybody else they're either career military, they're in chain of command, they are ambassadors, they have secret histories. And Marcus, other than, the mystery of his background and why he became a Ranger, even though he tells Delenn about his brother, even with that, Marcus pretty much is what you get. So he was such a different character from everybody else. I wasn't quite sure how to react to him at first.
I thought it was a breath of fresh air, because here you had someone, we finally got to meet a Ranger on a regular basis, someone who was interacting with the command staff, letting them know what exactly is going on. Because before then, we just had, Sheridan and Delenn giving orders. Delenn had kind of an idea of what's going on out there. Sheridan didn't. Garibaldi didn't. Ivanova didn't. Right. And now you have this person who's been brought into their midst as one of them, who's letting them know, who's sort of like the liaison, saying, hey, this is what's really going on out there. It's bad. Trust me, because I'm out there. And his ability to move in and out, to interact with the command staff, not quite on their level, but as an equal, and then melt back into the shadows and do what he needed to do. I liked that. I don't know. I guess maybe I'm just attracted to that maverick character. And I liked that character so much that one quibble I had with Crusade, I said, Crusade needs a Marcus-like character, someone who's strong, independent, and, expendable. Someone who could die on a moment's notice, but right. who is a key cog for the crew.
Well, wouldn't that have been Dorina?
No, I don't think so. I do not think so. And it definitely was not Galen.
No. Galen is basically the Delenn kind of character.
Mm-hmm.
Privy to deeper mysteries.
The alchemist. The magician, so to speak.
Yeah, right.
But
interesting.
No, I never saw Dorina as that character. I saw Dorina as something different. She was the link to the past and the future. She was where they had been and where they had to go. I didn't see her as the expendable maverick.
Well, I guess maybe it might be a question of how you define expendable.
Marcus.
When you think of Marcus as being expendable, you don't think of him as being expendable in the sense of your run of the mill red shirt.
No. I meant he's out there in the battle area. He could die at any time. Dorina was never out there.
I see. In other words, what you're saying is, as far as it goes, all affection we have for that character aside, he was simply a foot soldier. He was a Ranger. If he fell, another, as Delenn would say, another would take his place.
Right.
Okay.
And that was
okay.
not Dorina's character.
Right. Okay.
So that's just my little thought on Crusade. And how I linked it to Marcus. There you go.
I like it. It was good.
But I think
overall, it's a good episode. It's a great opener for the third year.
Mm-hmm.
And, sets up, like you say, it's where the chickens start coming home to roost.
Yeah. I did like how the military reasoning behind why Sheridan blew up that jump gate.
Yes.
I don't like grave robbers.
Yeah.
There's no reason for anyone to come here. I'm not making it easy for them. Can you imagine?
Well, that leads me to another question. It was something that I thought of this particular time watching the episode again. I understand you want to blockade. Okay, for example, the blockade of Zagros 7. You have a planetary blockade so that nobody can open up a jump point and get in.
Mm-hmm.
But you'd think you'd put like two or three of those things around the jump gate itself. If you're looking at, especially for transports, which generally, as you see through the series, don't have the ability to make their own jump point. Yeah. You know, they're either part of transports with larger vessels who can do that, or they're coming through jump gates.
No, so I see. The planet with the jump gate was in what they considered friendly territory. It was Centauri territory. It was their...
Sure, but if you're Centauri, what you do is you send the passcode through that says, I'm a Centauri vessel, and the blockade mine at the jump gate goes, oh, you're a Centauri, come on through. Next vessel in.
Well, see, a mine would damage the gate and make it unusable, and you don't want to destroy your own jump gate, even if you're trying to protect it.
Yeah, but I mean, those things that were in orbit that were shooting, they referred to as blockade mines.
Okay.
You know, so don't think of it as mine in terms of a proximity bomb. Think of it as basically an automated weapons platform.
Yeah.
Okay. So, but one or two of those things are on the jump gate. I mean, now you've got the double chokehold.
Yeah, perhaps.
You know,
maybe there was too much CGI involved for that.
I mean, the other thing is, I mean, if you really want to get, completely geeked on it, is that no matter how destructive a war is, and the Centauri did the unthinkable by using mass drivers on Narn, but it would be extremely unthinkable to destroy a jump gate, which makes Sheridan's technique of using the Markab gate even more outside the realm of thinking, because these things are hard to manufacture. You know, they rely on minerals that are extremely difficult to mine.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're at war with somebody, you want to choke them out, similar to thinking like in Napoleonic Wars, how did you fight a war? Everybody got into lines and marched in the field and shot that way. Nobody would ever think about, hiding in the trees. You just don't fight a war that way. Could be the same thing here. I don't know, just speculating.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I think that's it.
Yep, I think so too.
And again, if we've forgotten anything, I'm sure our listeners will let us know.
That's why they're so wonderful.
Yes, but that concludes our deep geeking for Matters of Honor. And we'll be right back after this with listener feedback.
This is NBS-1, Squad Leader Tajan to base with an urgent communique for Citizen Jakar. A craft of unknown origin has been detected on rapid approach. We were unable to complete the upgrades to our long-range sensors, and the vessel will be upon us before we can identify it. Based on our recent encounters with Centauri patrols, we have no choice but to assume that our countermeasures were ineffective, and we are under assault. I know this isn't what we wanted, Jakar, but if we must test the capabilities of our weapons, then this is how
This is Captain Jarstow, EAS Netherlands, to Narn Fighters. We have broken with our government and are not allied to the Centauri. We are not hostile. I repeat, we are not hostile.
EAS Netherlands? Earth Alliance? No matter. As of now, we must assume the project is compromised. Weapons hot, defense pattern Narog, no engagement, I repeat. No one fires until I give the order, or you are fired upon. Jakar, my friend, there is little time. The captain of this vessel, Jarstow, he claims to be a member of the faction allied with Sheridan. I must have confirmation. Use your contacts among the Earthers. If we do not have confirmation by the time we make visual contact, I will need to protect the interests of our people by whatever means necessary. I am sending a copy of their transmission with this message. Forward all information to our base. We will avoid any further contact as per protocol. Tajan out. EAS Netherlands, this is Squad Leader Tajan. I must demand that you alter your current heading towards the beacon coordinates I am sending now. We will escort you as we await confirmation of your political status. Repeat, you must alter your heading towards the designated beacon.
Listener feedback. Actually, but no. Mailbox report first.
There we go.
No man. Lost Tales DVD yet.
Oh, man.
And the crowd goes, aw.
But I got free Sky Miles.
Yeah.
So I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but how does the sky miles relate to your property on the moon?
I'm saving them up for a trip.
Okay.
And how many decades will that take?
Mm. Hey, I can dream.
Okay.
We should offer Star Fury miles.
Star Fury miles.
There you go.
Although all you get is a bag of
show.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know how many people who don't visit the website have noticed, but Yarsto was actually a guest debater over on the Sci-Fi Smackdown. They had a Star Furies versus X-Wing fighters Smackdown.
Yeah,
and apparently Yarsto rose up and finally Trampas lost a debate.
No, really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Trampas finally got smacked down.
Wow.
Yes. Everyone's saying, okay, Yarsto won that one.
I'm gonna have to check that out. Although to me it's a no brainer. Star Furies win hands down.
Yeah, but
for one reason, vectored thrust. while Luke Skywalker is zooming in wide arcs across the sky, you know, Captain Sharon's just kind of got to hit the thrusters, loop around, and blow the crap out of them.
You know, all of this is. It's just so cool how many new shows and great shows that we've got on Farpoint Media now. It just grows like weekly. It's nutty. There's always good stuff to listen to.
I lost count. I'm not sure where we're at now.
I've been working too much on other websites to keep track of the new ones coming in.
Well, Lipstick Aliens.
Lipstick
just
Aliens,
Bot
Culture.
Yeah.
Those are big new additions to the family. But everyone who's a Babylon 5 fan needs to go listen to the Star Furies versus X-Wing Fighters Smackdown. You'll have fun.
Absolutely.
You'll really, really have fun. So,
looking forward to that.
But we have...
All right. Ready to do some listener feedback then?
Yes.
Sure.
All right.
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Hi there. I'm listening to show 71. A point for Tim that I think he missed. The Kosh character is not projecting himself to look like God through these other characters that are seeing him. Way back at some point, they said that everybody's DNA had been tinkered with so that when they see a Vorlon, they see their God. So he just shows up, and they see what they've been programmed to see. And I think that the question as to whether or not the Centauri have gods is kind of a Centauri thing. Yeah, they've got 61 gods, but they're not gods. They're just deities that they've brought up, you know, because someone did something nice one time. They said, oh, you're a god, and suddenly everybody else believed they were gods. Remember, there's a point where Londo is saying that there is a rose in the garden that grows through the cracks of one of the yards in the capital. And the guy in charge at the time 1,000 years ago said, I like that, and had a guard put on it. And since then, there's been a guard standing there even without a flower. They're ones who start the tradition and roll with it and never bother to question it. So I think their litany of gods is just a matter of, yeah, whatever, you know, kind of gods. And I agree with Tim that Wando just saw nothing. He didn't even see the ball of light. Because we've been getting the impression that Kosh is an energy being, not a physical being, despite all the other crud that goes on. So just my opinion. Okay, have fun, folks. Bye.
Okay.
Okay, well, I would say one thing, as we see in Matters of Honor at the very beginning, the thing that Kosh tells Sheridan is being seen by so many is a draining experience, and he had to go in his ship and recharge. So that suggests that it is an active process in which the Vorlons engage in terms of how other entities perceive them.
Hmm.
Now, whether that is actually accessing the DNA code or whatever to trigger those things, I don't know, but it's not a passive process.
Well, the notion that energy has no physicality to it is a bit ballsy. I think that's very human to try to take that position.
So, Jeffrey, what did you see when you were in the encounter suit?
I couldn't see shit. You know that. I couldn't see anything. Not a damn thing. I can tell you what I smelled, but it isn't pleasant.
Oh, boy.
Wow.
Okay, next one.
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
Hello, Babylon Podcast. It's Kurt from St. George again. Okay, why can't Londo see Kosh? One answer is the Vorlons have never visited Centauri Prime, but that's a bit weak, a bit facile. Mike, I think you were close to the answer, but Londo's lack of faith is not quite right. Summer points out that he has faith, that he has a destiny to bring his people back to their former glory. See, I think it's the means that Londo has used to try to achieve this destiny which had damaged him and prevent him from seeing Kosh. When Londo allied himself with Mr. Morden and the Shadows and also with Lord Reefa, he lost a part of himself. To get metaphysical, his soul, if you like. Now, it's true at the beginning he was manipulated by Morden and Reefa, and he was unaware of the consequences of his actions. But by the end of the episode, Knives, Londo knows what he's done. He tells Veer he has blood on his hands. It's too late for him to turn back. He must walk the path. At that point, Londo deadens his own heart. By making this choice, he gives up the possibility of seeing or choosing a better path. He gives up the possibility of seeing beyond himself. Maybe a better way to think of this is to look at Londo and Jakar. They're two people traveling in opposite directions. Jakar will soon to be brought to the realization that he can be something better than he is. And he'll broaden his perspective, and he'll let go of his thoughts of revenge. But Londo, by choosing to walk the path, has diminished himself. His perspective has narrowed. He has willfully blinded himself and lost the capacity to see greater possibilities or greater realities. Now, this lost capacity is spiritual in nature, but it manifests itself in Londo's physical perception. That's why Londo cannot see Kosh. Anyway, that's my take. I hope it wasn't too convoluted.
Not well, that I understand that. Yes, I do.
Yeah,
not sure
right.
I agree with all of the pieces of it, but that actually does make sense. I can live with that.
Yeah, well, it gets back to our argument about the nature of faith and
yeah.
so forth. So yeah.
I have another theory.
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Well, as we know of the attributes Londo sported and his sexual prowess, I would say that he's just gone blind and couldn't see.
And that too works.
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
Hey, Babylon Podcast, it's Kurt again. This one's going to be really quick. I was looking at the Babylon 5 episode guide, and I found Peter Jurisic's, I guess it's first take, when Londo is asked, "Ambassador, what did you see when you looked up in the garden?"
I thought I saw a pussy cat. I did see a pussy cat.
I thought you guys would like that.
Oh, yes, I forgot about that one.
I had never heard that before. I saw Putty Cat.
Wow.
That's good stuff.
Yes. Oh, I love the bloopers. We need more of those.
Absolutely.
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
We're under attack. Here comes.
This is Jasto from the Netherlands.
Please make it stop talking in my mind.
These PPGs don't do much more than sting it. Prowls around hurt for a while, but it comes back stronger.
What?
What in the hell was that?
It sounded like a Babylon 5 stream of consciousness as playing in Yarsto's head.
Is that why he doesn't sleep much at night?
Possibly.
That explains
it. This is the result, because he said he was up for almost like 48 hours straight. He couldn't sleep at all. So this might be the end result of that.
Wow.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, new campaign. Let's send Yarstow some meds.
Yeah, that's right.
Chamomile tea for Yarstow. Coming right up.
I don't think the tea's going to cut it.
No? Okay.
No, I think he needs a sledgehammer to the skull.
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Hey, Tim, Jeffrey Summer, and Michael. This is Dio calling from Toronto, Canada. First things first, I wanted to say good job on the podcast. Love it. Been listening to you guys ever since you started, and let me say it's been a great time wasted when I used to work night shifts at a hospital down in the downtown core here. I have a question for Jeffrey. I noticed that he's been running the Tosh for President promos, and was wondering if he can reminisce about when Jerry Doyle was running, I guess, for Congress for the Republican Party. I'm not sure because, you know, you guys have two parties. Well, up here in Canada, we've got more than that. So I was wondering if we can hear maybe, you know, if he was helping with the campaign or what his ideas was when he heard Jerry Doyle was running. Other than that, I just wanted to say love the podcast where Jeffrey and Summer were not prepared and they called up fans. Always great to hear different stories, how people got into Babylon 5 and was wondering maybe, you know, if you guys would throw another special like that down the road. I'd love to participate. Other than that, just finished listening to Yarstow defending the Star Furies versus X-Wings, and as much as I love space battles in Babylon 5, you know, how those ships would dance, like ballet dancers, the kid in me would have to say, you know, give me an X-Wing any day. Thanks for listening to this message, and keep up the great work, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah, I definitely think the fan commentary show went over very well, and it's something we can do in the future, definitely.
Yeah.
Well,
we're all about not being prepared.
That's easy. We can let other people do our content for us all day long. That's great.
I mean, that really was my fault, because the one time in the past month and a half that I actually watched an episode before to talk about it, it was the wrong one. And I blame me for that. So, and lack of sleep. But hey, the that comment that had Yarstow's voice and all the clips, that was not from Yarstow. He's like, I don't know who did that, but it wasn't me.
Really?
No.
Wow.
So we don't. You have to tell us.
I don't remember. Yeah, I'll have to go dig back through the
voicemails email. And let us know who did that, so we can properly give them props.
Okay. Wow.
And that would be proper.
Next.
So, Jeffrey, what about Jerry Doyle running for Congress?
Well, you know, that went down at a time after the show, so a lot of us had kind of all gone our own way, but the word spread quickly, you know, amongst the B5 community. And, you know, I think an awful lot of us went ahead and rallied to his support just because we thought, well, if you've got balls enough to do this, then you might as well just deserve my vote. And it really, I think a lot of us tried to help him out in any way that we could. It's a pretty gutsy thing, I think, for anybody to be willing to take on political positions and the responsibilities that inherently come with those things. So, you know, kudos to him for just going for it and trying for it. I think that was also about the time that he went to Las Vegas, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong about that. But it was just a period of time when we weren't all as in touch as we had previously been.
Sure.
So I don't have a lot to offer beyond that.
That's all right. Doesn't matter, Kosh for President seems to have taken on a life of its own. Good job on that, Jeffrey, by the way.
Okay, we have one more, I think.
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Hey, Babylonians, this is Trampas Whiteman from the Dragonlance Canticle and Sci-Fi Smackdown podcast. Just wanted to comment a little bit on Comes the Inquisitor. First of all, my initial reaction to the revelation that Sebastian was Jack the Ripper. Oh my God. My jaw just dropped to the floor. It was an amazing piece, and I absolutely loved it. It was sort of cool to see that "Who are you?" bit come up again later on with Lorien, and even throughout the series. Just to let you know, I did a little investigation on the Wikipedia, the source of all knowledge, and found a few trivia notes on Jack the Ripper, and Babylon 5. Let's see. Apparently, Jack had been previously referenced in Mind War from the first season, where the Psi-Corp was claimed to have all the moral fiber of Jack the Ripper by Ivanova. The episode is apparently also referenced in an episode of the fourth season, Intersections in Real Time. Wayne Alexander, you know, who played Sebastian, appeared in that episode as well, mm-hmm. portraying a tortured Drazi prisoner. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Apparently, also, there was a mistake in the screenplay where Sheridan remarked that Jack the Ripper committed his murders on the west side of London when, in fact, it took place on the east side. The line was dubbed over at some point to correct the error, and the dubbed version is on the DVD release. However, the closed captions are still incorrect and refer to the west side. Then one last note, that there were some similarities with The Prisoner, a 1960s UK TV series. Says here, the whole interrogation premise is similar to how Leo McKern talks to Number 6 in the last two episodes of The Prisoner series. Also, Sebastian tells Delenn that she only gives answers that have been provided, defined, delineated, stamped, sanctioned, numbered, and approved by others. This is reminiscent of how Number 6 says, "I will not be pushed, filed, stamped, indexed, briefed, debriefed, or numbered. My life is my own." Thanks, guys. Love the show, and one of my favorite episodes ever. Gotta get the DVD. Thanks, guys. Bye.
DVD is necessary.
There we go. Yeah.
Yeah, so I think we had talked, somebody else had made the comparison between the mantra in the episode and the prisoner's mantra before, but it's nice to remind people of such.
Yeah, the thing is, though, that the prisoner was just that much more hallucinogenic. Those last two episodes of The Prisoner, make sure that you don't have anything in your bloodstream that's not normally there, because it's weird enough as it is.
I want to thank Trampas for putting three words together that I just adore, because it's the way I've been feeling lately. What a tortured Drazi prisoner. I think that's just great. Welcome to the hell that is my life.
Yeah, but he's still got the cane, you know.
Tortured Drazi prisoner. That's great.
Is that it for our feedback?
That is it for our feedback. Do we have a...
We had an email, but I forgot to print it off, so I'll read it next time.
Cue the dancing girls.
Oh, no dancing girls. But I should tell people now that there will be no recording on July 4th, Wednesday, July 4th, which means there'll be no live feed on July 4th and no regular show to go out on July 11th. Now, I have been briefed that quite possibly, maybe Yarstow, Edmund, and Tijan could come up with something to fill that gap.
I'm a scare.
Yeah. Whether or not they come up with something, I won't know until later. But it should be interesting.
It won't be too much longer, and you won't have to do this show anymore. The fans are going to take it over and just do it you.
I've been told that...
I still have to put my voice in, because I have a fan club.
You do?
Yeah.
Wow.
Valerie Smith, remember?
Yeah, see, I had...
I don't think one person can make a club.
I think it can be if I want it to be.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Jeffrey. You know where I'm going with it, yeah.
Well, I do. It's because I submitted my membership application and you rejected it, so I know it's a pretty exclusive hot deal. It's
well,
not
exactly.
Easy.
Well, you know, any club that would have me as a member, we don't want you to... Wait a minute, that's not how it goes. Never mind.
Oh, brother. All right, Summer, get us out of here.
Okay. If you would like to send in a comment, an email comment, that email address is BabylonPodcast@gmail.com. And if you're inventive enough to record your own gifts to the show, you can send them there too. Or if you just want to send us a regular voicemail comment, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year the Great War came upon us all.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the gate.